Welcome to episode one of Dipsomania, the podcast about booze and cocktail culture. I'm Jake, and in this episode, Lance and I discuss the sidecar cocktail and so much more. Enjoy.
So, cheers.
Cheers.
Sugary rim.
I did not sugar my rim. So, our cocktail of the day is the sidecar, which is not one of my usual drinks.
Mine either, as I mentioned to you earlier, that I don't have any cognac. It's not a drink that I normally sip or enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do have Armagnac. And the reason that I have a bottle of Armagnac was that it was on like super sale at K&L Wines.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular bottle was like highly rated and 25 years old. So I'm thinking maybe I'll like this. If I don't like cognac, maybe I'll like.
Right.
And no, I still don't drink it.
Yeah, I never liked cognac. It used to give me like instant headaches if I tried to sip it neat.
This isn't bad. I'm liking this sidecar though.
Yeah, I keep cognac around expressly so I can make Vucarés,
mm-hmm.
which is a fantastic drink.
I think I also put it in the wrong glass. This is a fairly large. This is like a 2 ounce Nicanora.
Mm.
Not really a cocktail glass, so I'm breaking that rule, but you don't have sugar on your rim, so.
Right. Well, we'll get to this in a second, but I actually balanced the drink in the glass to somebody else's terminology, so I added a little simple syrup to it.
I see.
It is classically a three-ingredient drink.
True. So you fucked with it.
Well, no, I didn't even. So I have a large library of cocktail books, and of all these cocktail books, every recipe for a sidecar is different.
Oh, I just went online and I asked a couple of sites, and then I'm actually not using Cointreau either. I'm using the Clément Creole shrub,
okay,
which is rum agricole based.
Yep.
So it added an additional note of sweetness, but the lemon offsets that well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I like this better because I don't tend to like liqueurs. I find them syrupy, and it's not something that I like. You see those ads for Di Serrano and.
Yeah.
Whatever. And they're like, just pour it on ice and drink it. It's super classy.
Uh-huh.
I would never do that. Like, I'm not in high school, so I don't really want to drink syrup.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, and it's also a pretty color, I think. I don't know if that's because of the Clément, but.
Yours looks more clear than mine. Mine is very evidently showing the lemon juice.
I used my little sieve to get all the junk out.
I did too. So originally, apparently, the sidecar was like a Negroni. It was 1 ounce each of brandy, Cointreau, and lemon juice.
Oh, all right.
Which sounds like direct to me.
Yeah, it sounds super fruity and sweet.
Yeah, I don't like that much citrus, especially lemon juice. Kind of my least favorite of the citrus mixers.
Mm.
This is from Vintage Spirits and Forgotten Cocktails, which is an excellent book. And he says in his note that the beauty of this cocktail is that if it's too strong, you just decrease the brandy, or too sweet, you add more lemon juice, or too sour, add more Cointreau. He calls it a comfortably adjustable drink.
I would agree with that.
Which is also true of, say, a Negroni or something like that. Once you are familiar with it, you can fiddle with it. I used very little lemon juice. I think I used 2 ounces of the cognac, an ounce of dry curacao. I used the Pierre Ferrand dry curacao, and 3/4 ounce lemon juice. And part of that was actually Meyer lemon juice because I'm low on fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes the sharpness out of the lemon juice even more using the Meyer.
So my recipe is, I went to liquor.com and they did 1.5 of the cognac, VSOP,
yeah.
1.5 to 3/4 to 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I was using this other ingredient, I went to their site and they do have a Creole sidecar, which is 2 ounces of, actually they recommend using rum agricole.
Oh, wow.
Instead of the cognac, along with the Creole shrub and the fresh lemon juice, but it's 2 ounces to 1 ounce of shrub to 3/4 of an ounce of the lemon juice.
That practically makes it a tiki drink.
Yeah. Well, you know, they are down in Martinique, so maybe that's what they're shooting for.
Yeah.
And I do like this.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. One of my books pointed out that it's basically a margarita, but with cognac.
Oh, yeah, that is true. And lemon instead of lime. And you say you don't like citrusy things?
As far as drinks go, I'm only interested in having like one or two of a drink like this with that much citrus in it. I thought it was really interesting that everybody makes this drink slightly different. There was Morgenthaler that talked about balancing the drink in the glass instead of sugaring the rim.
Mm-hmm.
And he does 1.5 cognac, 3/4, 3/4, like your recipe that you found. But then he adds a teaspoon of simple syrup. And then PDT does a different recipe. Employees Only does a different recipe. Death and Company do a different recipe. Everybody.
And do you have a strong aversion to the sugared rim?
It gets sticky on the outside of the glass, and I don't like that.
All right. But do you salt your margaritas?
Yes.
But you don't add salt to the margarita?
No. I have actually seen somebody make mention of a salted simple syrup.
Ew. That would seem to have limited appeal.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not sure what else you would use. Like, well, I don't know. I don't know if you guys went through it, but here in San Francisco, there was definitely, probably last year, a big salted cocktail thing that happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were adding like smoked salt and Malden salt and different salts to cocktails. But I think it's passed. I think we've gone through salted cocktails. I don't know what we're on now. We don't do the washed fat cocktails anymore either. I think we're getting back to like just using liquor.
Yeah. I thought the washed fat, like, you know, the bacon whiskey and stuff like that was actually kind of fun, but I'm glad it didn't become like a permanent thing. it was something interesting to try.
Yeah, Dinah did a peanut butter washed, what did she use? I don't remember what the base liquor was. She did the same thing that you do with the bacon, you know, let it in there and then she froze it and got the liquor out. And she made a drink using that and I want to say like cream de cacao or something, and it ended up being like a Snickers bar that you would drink.
Uh-huh.
But the interesting thing to me was it really tasted more almondy than peanutty, which I actually enjoyed more. But it wasn't almondy like an almond liqueur, right? It just had the scent or like a hint of almond. But I think it was successful. She hasn't done it again. I think it is one of those things you experiment with to see what happens.
Right. Yeah. Like, does this actually work? And then you confirm it does. And it's like, well, it was neat, but it's not really worth the effort.
Yeah. And I never had any of the bacon washed or the fat or the other meat washed drinks.
I did a bacon rye. To be honest, it should have been a bacon bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
The rye just had sort of too much spice and backbone and kind of fought with the bacon flavor.
Here's something that came up this week. I went to dinner with friends Friday night and big bourbon fans, turns out. These are people I didn't know, so I guess friends of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And being at a dinner party, I brought a bottle of wine, as you do. But they did bring a bottle of bourbon, and it was Basil Hayden, which is a fine bourbon. I enjoy it very much.
It is.
And we did start talking about whiskeys in general, because in my head, it's all of a thing. Like, if you like bourbon, you're going to like rye. You're probably going to like scotch. You might not go strong on the scotch side.
Yeah, scotch is a whole nother category.
Well, I see that now. And I also realize, just based on my own history, how I learned to appreciate and, in fact, enjoy scotch. It was a slow process, and it was really an educational process as well, because I was used to thinking of things that I put in my mouth as flavors you're used to having in your mouth.
Right.
As opposed to this is like iodine or dirty bandage or the other typical scotchy things that you hear.
My wife describes scotch in two flavor categories. Either it tastes like bananas or it tastes like band-aids.
I have never gotten the banana thing.
Yeah.
Is there a specific scotch she feels is banana-y?
It's something to do with like which kind of phenols are in it. I can recognize the ones she calls bananas as like, yeah, that sort of tastes like bananas, but I don't think I'd describe it as bananas.
Mm. Just a side note, I am going to agree with you on the sugared rim. The other problem, not that it gets sticky, but it's unpleasant against your lips. It's kind of sandy or something. And you're like, do I chew it off or what do I do with it?
I don't have that problem with the salt on a margarita.
Well, I think also because the salt isn't sugar, it doesn't stick and become this weird cement thing around the edge. I like it from a presentation point of view.
Oh, yeah. Especially in like the holiday season, you can do cinnamon mixes and stuff like that and like do all kinds of fun things.
But yeah, just sitting around at home and having a cocktail for a podcast?
No.
Not so much.
To be honest, like, when I'm making cocktails at home, I hardly ever garnish. Unless it's a Luxardo cherry, because those are delicious.
We'll come back to that, because I do want to talk about that. But first, backtracking even further.
Yes.
So they had this Basil Hayden, which I consider a really smooth bourbon. Like, it's not... I don't want to offend anyone, but it's an inoffensive bourbon, right? It's kind of a bourbon that anybody is going to like.
It's not challenging, but it's strong.
So I asked them about the other things, and the couple had a strong dislike of rye, which surprised me.
I don't understand that. Yeah,
I don't either. I'm glad you share my opinion on this, because I was trying to convince them that they really do like rye. No, you like rye.
I just think of rye as like a less sweet bourbon, like a little bit spicier, less sweet.
Yes, and it does tend to have a little more heat to it as well on the back.
Yep.
But I actually enjoy rye more than bourbon. I think for the same reason that I tend not to like the liqueurs is that bourbon after a while is to me very sweet and kind mm-hmm. of it's not something I want to sit around and sip on a rock or, you know.
Something that's really good in like cask strength is different than most bourbons you'll find people having on their shelf. And I enjoy those quite a bit. But same story, like give me a high quality cask strength rye and that's my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, I agree. And I also, this will also sound bad. I think there are like baby versions of bourbons.
Yeah.
As well as baby versions of scotch, like things that are easy on your palate and you can just like guzzle.
Right.
And I'm not offended by them, but at the same time, I kind of want people to start there, but move on. And I think a lot of people don't move on.
So I have a question about your friends, your new friends. Did they use ice?
They did. They did use ice.
I would have guessed that.
Are you being a little judgy?
Maybe a little, maybe.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't use it with like a Basil Hayden or a Woodford Reserve at all. In fact, most bourbons, now that I think about it, I don't use with ice. I may put a little bit of water in.
Bourbon in particular, I actually enjoy cooled a little bit. So I'll do like a single, like I have the 1-inch by 1-inch molds. I'll do one of those in like a heavy pour of bourbon.
Okay. And then there was another comment during the party which you often hear, or at least I often hear, mm-hmm. that the bourbon drinkers wished that they liked gin better.
Yeah.
I was like, well, you can.
Right.
It's not necessarily a wish. It was just curious to me that they, because I have heard that before, where people who don't like gin want to like gin.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I can agree to an extent, because I did try different cognacs, right?
Yeah.
I kept saying, well, maybe this isn't the cognac for me. No, I don't like cognac.
I only like cognac as a sort of secondary ingredient. Like I said before, I love the Vieux Carré.
So do you make that a lot?
Especially in the cooler weather, yes.
Oh, really? I would think of it as a hot drink. Hot weather drink, not a hot Vieux Carré. I
mean. Well, no, because it's whiskey and cognac and sweet vermouth. I mean, it's a fancy Manhattan, and it's got the spicy notes from the Benedictine that goes into it.
Okay.
It seems like a holiday drink to me.
I relate it so strongly to New Orleans, and then I think of New Orleans as hot and sweaty. And
true.
So that, maybe that's why I'm thinking.
No, that's where it's from, and that is a valid thought process. But for me, it goes hand in hand with Manhattans, and I tend to drink Manhattans in the cooler months.
Hmm. I drink Manhattans all the time. I really, it is right up there. Martinis and Manhattans, maybe because they are simple and they're really difficult to fuck up badly.
So I think you can honestly ruin a Manhattan.
Well, yeah, the foamy Manhattan.
Yeah.
Is not good. I think everyone can agree with that.
I think a shaken martini is still going to be reasonably good.
Yes. I would agree with that.
As long as it's gin and as long as it's cold, a martini is okay.
And even if you put really crappy olives in it or whatever the garnish is, it's still good.
Right. What's actually fun is making someone who knows how to shake a martini a better martini and like, try this. And it's like, oh, that's totally different. I think I like it. But ruined Manhattan is a ruined Manhattan. No, at this point, it's like, you know what? Can I have a Negroni instead?
Because that really is hard to fuck up.
It's reliable. I enjoy it. It honestly is probably my favorite cocktail overall.
And again, no garnish for you. No orange peel.
The orange peel takes it to the next level. It makes it far more enjoyable. But I enjoy it just fine without the orange peel. And I don't like do the volume of making drinks that peeling the peel off an orange for a cocktail makes sense. Because I'm not going to use the rest of the orange. So,
but do you do it for guests?
Yeah, if we're having a party, I'll get a big bag of citrus.
Or even your friend is over. Like, so I have a friend at a time because I live in a hovel, tiny San Francisco apartment. I can't really have cocktail parties. But I think I take pride in making a good cocktail, and for me, part of that is the garnish.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the regular vegetable peel to make the big ones. Mm-hmm. I've got the other one that has like the little divot, that you can go around.
Knife.
Yeah, yeah. And I do practice like occasionally because I want to make an impressive looking cocktail as well as a good tasting cocktail.
Yep.
Because what is it? The mouth you taste with your eyes first, or whatever chefs say. And I think, but I don't think it makes. It's not like it's not like it's going to make up for a bad cocktail. Like
no.
Look at this beautiful presentation. It's like the glass is important, and all those things are important.
It really does change it. Like you can have a perfectly made cocktail with excellent ingredients, and then make the same cocktail with a good garnish, and that one is vastly superior.
You mentioned before that you're not a garnish fan, or at least you.
No, I am a garnish fan. I'm just, when I'm making cocktails for my wife and I at home, I don't bother because, especially when it comes to like doing twists and stuff like that, you're just ruining citrus.
Yeah, I guess. I think I plan it so that if I am going to use the peel, then I'm going to keep the juice for later. I just ream it into a container and stick it in the fridge, and I'll use it.
Right.
So I don't think I waste too much of it. So the other garnish is olives, cherries.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you mentioned before that you use the Luxardo.
Yeah.
Is that it for cherries? That's your cherry of choice?
It's the most reliable, like something I can find that is good.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried, there's the ones, I don't know what they're called, they come in that like white porcelain.
Actually, yes, I have tried those, and they are fairly indistinguishable from Luxardo.
I think so too, and they're more expensive probably because of the beautiful container that they come in.
Probably.
And you can never go through that many, like they start to crystallize before you ever get down to the bottom.
Right, and so the crystallizing is a thing that happens with Luxardo cherries as well.
And is there a way around that?
I counter it with booze. Pro tip, ladies and gents.
So you just pour some booze in the jar?
I pour some whiskey in the jar.
Oh, that's okay. Even though they're brandied cherries, aren't they?
At this point, who can really tell?
Yeah. And I did. Have you tried making your own brandied cherries?
I have made booze-soaked cherries. So like without any sort of sugar syrup or anything like that.
Yeah.
And they're sort of a middling experience. Like they're not the little bitter cherries that Luxardo uses, the little Marasca cherries, which are nice, tight little fruit. And if you get Colorado cherries, they're like larger sort of Bing cherry sized.
Yeah.
And they just get kind of flabby and they lack a little texture compared to the Luxardos.
Yeah. I tried Absinthe here in the city has a cookbook, and they make their own brandy cherries, and they publish the recipe online. And I did try 1 year making my own brandy cherries, and I would agree they're worth just buying.
Yeah,
making them yourself is a hassle, and you do have to pit them, and that takes time. And then you do end up with like these kind of flabby things that are
just not the same.
They're not pleasant. But I have So I have the Luxardo cherries. I have, I think I told you last week, I have pickled grapes.
Yes.
Which are interesting. And work with, so I made a drink last night. I made some watermelon juice, and you have to use it in about a week. So last night I did a thing with 2 ounces of gin, 1/2 ounce of peach shrub, and 1.5 ounces of watermelon juice. Because watermelon juice, you, if you want to taste the watermelon, you got to use, you, I don't know what they do, but you got to use a lot of it.
Right.
And then I used the pickled grapes with that. And because of the peach shrub was already, you know, vinegary.
Yeah.
That was, it was awesome. It was very, it turned out really good.
I'm noticing you have a wide variety of shrubs.
I don't, well, I have two. Do I? I think I just have the, I have
is
the peach
just
shrub.
The two?
I just have the two, okay. The quince shrub and the peach shrub.
Well, and what was the Creole thing that you made your side?
Oh, well, you know, I don't know if that is a shrub because it's not made with vinegar. It's made with rum agricole,
mm-hmm.
orange peel. But and they were talking on their site about how they make it because I was curious what was the difference between this and using a Grand Marnier.
Yeah.
But it's not really a shrub, so I don't know why they call it a Creole shrub.
Okay.
And it comes in a giant bottle. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not a little bit big.
Huh.
It's an ample amount for you to use, which is probably why I still. I mean, I bought it like 2 years ago out of curiosity.
Right.
So maybe I should make more of these because it works really well on this.
Yeah, yours sounded better than mine, to be honest.
So you mentioned in our notes for this show, the millionaire cocktail.
Yeah. Let's real quick do the discussion of orange liqueur, though, since you touched on Grand Marnier.
All righty.
So what's your favorite orange liqueur? What do you keep?
I actually surprisingly have a bunch that I didn't know that I had a bunch of. So I've got I have Grand Marnier, I have Cointreau, I have this... The Creole shrub, and then I also have a bottle of the dry Curacao.
Mm-hmm.
And I've in the past had a bottle of the Cambier because they didn't have the Cointreau, and it's indistinguishable to me. They taste exactly the same.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned to you earlier, before we started recording, I haven't really just sipped them to see what they taste like. Different. Obviously the dry Curacao tastes completely different from the other liqueurs.
Yeah.
And I haven't really found it's interesting to use in place of, but it changes the flavor profile so distinctly. I don't know if you can call those cocktails
well,
the same thing.
And that honestly may be my problem with my sidecar because I use the dry Curacao.
Oh. Yeah, I think I don't hate it, but I haven't found something that I love it in.
I like it. I specifically, the Pierre Ferrand Dry Curacao is a bottle that I tend to keep, and I'm struggling right now to even tell you what I use it for, but I tend to have that around.
Are you using it as a substitute for, like, a Grand Marnier?
Or a Cointreau. Or Triple Sec or whatever.
Does it work in a martini? Not a martini, a margarita.
It does work. I like it in a margarita.
Hmm. I've literally never thought of using it because I'm sort of married to standard, because I like a margarita. I will have to try it, though.
The other orange liqueur that I tend to keep around is the Leopold Brothers, which is fantastic.
I have not tried that.
I highly recommend it.
All right. And again, I can't tell you why I have so many orange liqueurs around, because I don't tend to use them that often.
Right. Like, I never have Grand Marnier, and I only buy Cointreau if I'm going to do margaritas, like, in mass quantities. And orange liqueur is a good thing to have around, because, like, it's fairly common that something comes up that uses Triple Sec or Grand Marnier or Cointreau. Like, as long as you have something that tastes like orange, you can approximate any of those recipes.
Okay.
Obviously, if it's calling for Grand Marnier, it's looking for something a little bit deeper and round flavored. But
I remember why I keep the Cointreau around. It's for Corpse Survivors.
Yes.
I don't know why that didn't hit me in the head, because I love a Corpse Survivor, but that's why I have it generally.
Yeah.
Should we pause for cocktail number two? I'm dry. I don't know about you.
I'm dry as well. Yeah. And we're back.
Hello.
Did you do the same?
I switched out the Clément for the dry Curaçao.
Hmm.
And it's much more orangey.
Okay. I switched out the dry Curaçao for the Fancy Pants Grand Marnier that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And changed the ratios a bit. I did 1.5 cognac to 1 Grand Marnier and 1 Meyer lemon juice.
Oh, all right. I'm going to say that I enjoy this more than my other one. Maybe because, again, as we also discussed, I'm not a big rum fan.
Right.
And the Creole rub shrub is rum-based.
Right.
So that definitely comes through as a note.
And Agricole is so sort of raw tasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got the St. George rum Agricole, the California.
Yep.
One that they make, and I do still have it. not to my taste.
Mm-hmm.
I need to find things What can I use this in that will mask its taste?
Mojitos. Make some strong mojitos.
I have literally never made a mojito.
Really?
Well, I don't have mint hanging around generally.
Mm.
So I need to, like, plan those kind of things. I guess I'm having a mojito party.
In my suburban mindset, I have a potted mint plant that pretty much lasts forever.
I need to do that because I do like mint in things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to put on my checklist.
Just to have mint available for a nice julep now and then is well worthwhile.
Mm, I will admit, I have never had a mint julep.
What?
Nope, never had one.
That's interesting. It's practically just bourbon with some mint and sugar added nearby. And lots of ice. So, like, it becomes a sippable bourbon drink.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's like a Moscow Mule, right? It's got that little silver cup, if you want to do it upright, with the little silver straw.
Yep.
And the mound of ice.
Yes.
It's got to stick up out, yep. And then the cup is sweating, and
yeah, it gets not even sweat; it gets frost on the outside. It's kind of glorious.
That definitely appeals to me, but I guess if I go someplace and I see it on a menu, I always think I could have that, but I could have an Aviation or something amazing.
You're right. I hardly ever would order even a Moscow Mule. Much less a julep out somewhere, because there's something more interesting available.
I am now convinced that the appeal of the Moscow Mule rests solely in using the copper mug.
Yeah.
Because we went somewhere, and someone ordered one, and it came just in a glass. And they just stared at it, and like, that's not... that is not what I want.
That's a vodka buck.
You definitely need, in that case... I don't think it may not be so true with a mint julep. I don't know. Having never had one, is it disappointing if it doesn't come all made up in its little julep thing with the... And isn't there's a julep strainer, right?
Yes.
And is that specific... Did they make that specifically because juleps needed a special strainer, or...?
No, because I usually build a julep right in the little cup.
For the audience at home, the look of incredulity on his face... was really good. No.
I never make a julep like in a mixing glass and then strain it over the ice.
Mm-hmm.
So I never have used my julep strainer to make a julep.
Oh, I do want to bring it. So this is, as we're talking about technique, I was at Stuckey's Club Moderne, I guess a couple of weeks ago. And do you know about Stuckey's?
Vaguely. I think actually you were talking about it probably when you went.
Yeah. It was for one of our Tipple Tuesdays. We ended up there after going to Liho Liho, actually, which was also awesome. But Stookie, so we were sitting at the bar and looking at the various liqueurs behind the bar, and we noticed he had both of the Tempest Fugit, the creme de menthe, and the creme de cacao. And we know that if we combine those two things with cream, you get the best grasshopper in the fucking world. Like,
sure,
out of this,
because those are the two best examples of those liqueurs that I have ever tasted.
Right. So we see it's not on the menu, but we're like, you have the ingredients. Can you make us grasshoppers? Because we just had dinner, but we didn't have dessert. This was kind of our cocktail dessert.
Sure.
He had an old fashioned shake mixer. You know, the kind with like the bulbous, like the egg shaped engine at the top with the stock, and you put the glass up in there and it kind of sits in this cradle and mixes.
Oh wow.
So he made them in that. and they poured
frothy.
Out. Oh God. That the presentation, like, we admired number one that he had that machine.
Right.
And then the fact that he went, I think, I don't know that he does, maybe this is how he makes, like, everyone should make grasshoppers this way. Everybody needs to have a milkshake machine at home. But it I don't know if it made it taste even better, but it was orgasmic. It was the best possible thing, like combination of everything, like watching him make it, the machine, and it's chrome mm-hmm. and beautiful, and he brings it out of the bar and pours the drink. Oh, it was awesome. I loved it.
So feel free to veto this question and delay it for a later talk. But I'm wondering, what is the most complicated cocktail you are willing to make at home?
Probably a Pisco Sour.
Very similarly, mine is the Ramos Gin Fizz.
Yeah, and they're both super worthwhile.
Yes.
And I do the little, like, the dots on the foam, and you use the toothpick absolutely. To make little hearts, and I'm...
If you get a really good egg foam, like, you need to decorate
Yes,
that.
And everybody's super impressed, and they're like, how did you... Do you shake it, like, on the foam? How do you make these hearts? And, like, I can't tell. It's a secret that I've learned, and I promised I wasn't going to tell anybody. But the secret, for those at home, is super simple, right? Should I tell them the secret?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So you've got your Pisco Sour. And by the way, if you've never had or made a Pisco Sour, you definitely need to do both of those things.
First, go out and have one.
So you want to go someplace that does it well. Like, you got to shake the hell out of it. You got to use fresh egg white. It is so worthwhile. It's a delightful and delicious drink. But if you shake the hell out of it, then you get... And you do the dry shake, and we can talk about all these weird techniques and stuff.
Right.
After you've done all the shaking and your arms are just rubber, and you've poured it into the glass, and you have this thick foam on the top, then you add, and for me, it's 4. I don't know if there's a specific number of dots.
I think it's typically supposed to be 3.
Okay. I do compass points, so.
Yeah, I think in Peru, it's 3 sort of on the opposite side of the mouth. So,
and
if
you want to do it right, you need to take the Angostura and put it in an eyedropper, because otherwise you're not going to be able to do this well.
Because depending on the level inside an Angostura Dasher bottle, you never know what's going to happen.
Nope, and you'll end up with little splattery things, and you're going to be so upset with yourself. So take the time to do this. It's not that hard. And once you do it, it's so impressive. It's like a magic trick, basically. You don't want to give it away. So anyway... Put it in an eyedropper. You don't have to. I recommend that you do. And then you put, apparently, 3 or 4 drops of Angostura bitters onto the egg white foam, the foam top that you end up with. And it happens. You don't have to, like, worry about, like, having foam set aside or anything. It works magically.
It floats to the top like the head of a Guinness. It's amazing.
And then you take a toothpick or any implement like a toothpick, and you basically just drag it in a circle through the drops of Angostura that you put on there, and it makes these lovely little hearts, and it just works perfectly. It's an much simpler way of making a really impressive cappuccino.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about pouring the foam or working it into the... No. It's like you got the little hearts, and lovely. Now talk about the Ramos, because that's also a beautiful drink.
It's got cream, it's got egg, it's got all the foamy stuff in it.
Mm-hmm. And then you top it with the seltzer water as well.
Yeah, and the goal, so you serve this in like a Collins glass, a nice tall glass.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is to have the egg foam actually extend above the top of the glass. And then you serve it with a straw. And it's phenomenal.
It's real, and it's delicious. It is one of the best drinks I think I've ever had. It's so satisfying. So the Ramos story I can tell is I was in New Orleans probably 2, maybe 3 years ago, staying with my very good friend Pablo, who knows everybody in the city. He's a food editor or food writer.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of us were coming into town to spend the weekend there, and he took us to, and it was a restaurateur's lovely home with a lovely pool. Everything was lovely. But they had figured out how to make a Ramos. Like, so the other thing about a Ramos Gin Fizz is it's hard to make it in numbers.
Oh, yes, because it's actually very hard to actually make two at a time. And like most cocktails are very easy to double in the shaker, and you can make cocktails for two, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
The Ramos Gin Fizz is very borderline to make two at a time.
It takes a while. You're going to have a lot of thirsty, not necessarily angry, because after they get it, they're super happy, but
right.
at least jealous people waiting in line to get these drinks. So there were probably 8 to 10 people at this, and we all wanted Ramos Gin Fizzes. So he had figured out how to make them in bulk. And the secret is he had a paint shaker.
Oh my goodness.
The Ramos did originate in New Orleans, right? Isn't there some story about them passing it along? And
I'm fairly certain, yes. Yeah.
Some bar. Is it Ramos or Ramos?
Ooh, that's a good question. I always say Ramos.
I as well, but I don't know the correct. And I've heard it both ways. Anywho's, so we are in New Orleans. It is hot. It is I think we were there in May or June, and we're going over to this guy's house, and Pablo is promising us that we're all going to get Ramos Gin Fizzes. And I know, as you know, that it takes forever to make a Ramos Gin Fizz.
Right.
And he's promising us, no, he's figured it out. He knows how to do this. And we're thinking he's got, I don't know, a line of slave boys. they all have a shaker, and you watch them just line up. And
uh-huh.
They're all cracking the eggs and doing it like in unison, kind of cartoonishly. But no, he puts the ingredients into a paint can, and one assumes this is a
sterilized, pristine paint can.
And I don't remember what the ingredients are or the amount, but he had it figured out so that he could do this in volume. Puts it on the paint can, seals the paint can, hammer, 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 hammer. Puts it in a paint can shaker or a paint shaker. I don't know what the actual term is.
Mm-hmm.
And just lets it go for 10 minutes.
That's amazing.
And then pours them all out, and we all got Ramos Gin Fizzes at the same time. It was awesome. So that's something in addition to the Proctor Silas shake maker, may want to invest.
In a paint shaker.
In a paint shaker.
There's lots of crossover there.
Mm-hmm. It depends on how much you love a Ramos Gin Fizz and how many friends you have coming over on a weekend. But I think the fact that you can promise that everybody's going to get one and nobody has to wait, it's great.
That's amazing. I'm very impressed.
It's one of my favorite times that I've ever had. The pool wasn't bad, but the Ramos was really the winner there.
I would imagine having access to a pool would make New Orleans 10,000 times nicer.
It is. It's a little sweaty there. I don't know.
I love New Orleans. I am absolutely in love with New Orleans. But
I think
almost died in New Orleans
from the sweatiness.
Well, because I was wearing like my heavy denim hipster jeans and a black T-shirt, and like I was an idiot.
No. I mean, that's my uniform, basically. So I'm right there with you. I think it's important to look good.
We were marching around, like, my friends wanted to see cemeteries and stuff like that. And we were just walking all around, and, like, I've done a little bit of research, and I know where things are. And, like, the one thing my friends who knew New Orleans told me was not to go to the touristy place that does the hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name? It's, like, something O'Malley's or yeah. something like that.
With the giant glasses that you can carry yeah. out, and yeah.
And it's like, don't bother with that. Go someplace good.
Yeah.
Of which there are many.
That was, I mean, the advantage of having a friend who lives there is they will take you to those places. So it's not, you're not relying on a book to tell you or your concierge or whatever. You like go over to Pablo's house and then Pablo goes, today I'm taking you to this place out in the middle of Bodunk, Futt-butt, whatever,
mm-hmm.
but they do this sandwich that is a combination of beef gravy and oysters.
Oh my God.
Oh my God is right. This thing. And then the other thing is, and I can't remember what it's called, but I'm just going to call it scrapings. So after they make the beef, they mm-hmm. scrape all of the
griddle.
All the little beef bits into the gravy. So you get this super unctuous, delicious, dark brown beef gravy over fried oysters in a soft bun.
Good Lord.
It was horrible, and I hate it, and you shouldn't ever, ever do it. But oh my God. Oh my God. It's so good. And then the chopped salad and everything. There's nothing wrong with New Orleans. Those people know how to live.
There really isn't. So anyway, just to finish the story, we were marching around, and it was, you know, probably like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which you would think it would be starting to turn cooler, but it wasn't.
No.
And I was in my heavy denim jeans and my black t-shirt, and I was just wilting.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you know what time of year was it?
Oh, October, early October.
Oh, and that's actually livable.
Well.
I'm just saying, compared to, like, August.
Right.
Or even we were there in, like I said, June. I would think October, but I don't know.
It was apparently a hot year in October that year. I was wilting. I couldn't think straight. And, you know, my friends kept wanting to go over here and go over there. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't help.
Yeah, no, I'm done.
And then they decided they were done marching around to cemeteries. So, like, hey, Jake, find us a place to eat. Or, hey, Jake, find us a place to get drinks or something. And I'm like, I can't even think right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we turned the corner, and there was whatever the place is.
Oh, the hurricane place?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to go to this place, but they have drinks. Let's go. So we went in, and sure enough, it was actually, it was really impressive. Because they handle so many people.
Is this the one with, like, they're all, like, in Slurpee machines behind the bar? Like, the frozen ones?
Well, I mean, that's Bourbon Street as a whole, right? Is like, all the Slurpee machines.
And it is a whole. Hello!
No, I assume this place had Slurpee machines, too. But it has a nice courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a flaming fountain.
Uh-huh.
And things of that nature.
Okay.
And they do really heavy traffic, and they get you all your drinks at the same time, even though you're like 12 people. You know, they're syrupy, hurricane, like.
But you're hot, and you're disgusting, and.
Yeah.
It's perfect. So,
and there's a perfect photograph of me sitting at the table, forcing a smile.
I have to confess, I've been to New Orleans maybe 3 times, and I've never actually gotten out of the car when we've been downtown on Bourbon Street.
Mm-hmm.
We go to like all the other places. Again, I'm totally reliant on Pablo to tell me where to go and what to eat and who to talk to. And he's not snobbish at all. Like if it's a good place, he recommends it, and there are plenty of tourist places. The reason that they're popular is because they are good, right?
Yes.
We're late in our schedule, and we still still have not talked to you about the Millionaire Cocktail.
Okay, so we need to circle back on a couple of things.
All right.
The Ramos Gin Fizz is 2 ounces of gin, 1 ounce heavy cream, a half ounce lemon juice, a half ounce of lime juice, half ounce of simple syrup, a couple of dashes of orange flower water, and an egg white. And you dry shake it, and then you shake it with ice. And
you shake the shit out of it is what you do, though.
Forever. Forever.
Yeah. Again, it's got a storied history. There's apparently you're supposed to shake it for a specific number of minutes.
There are recipes that tell you you're supposed to shake it at least like 2 minutes or 3 minutes, which I will testify is impossible.
Yeah. Your hands get a little, so the story is that they would pass it down, right?
From hand to hand.
From hand to hand, yeah. Right? Yeah. So, and it would take 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that makes any difference, I think it comes down to the idea about shaking in general, like the Japanese guy who shakes it for a specific way. And
well, I make my Ramos Gin Fizzes probably with about 30 seconds of shaking.
Which is ample.
I shake very hard.
And you do the dry shake, as you mentioned, which helps.
Yes, and I dry shake before the 30-second shake, but I'm exhausted by 30 seconds.
Like, we should mention, to those who don't know, a dry shake means you just shake it without ice.
Yeah, yeah, so it's in your shaker with no ice cubes, and you're just breaking down the egg white and combining the ingredients, so getting a little bit of a foam.
And I've heard other people say you take the spring off the strainer, and you throw that in as well.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard that too. I haven't bothered
with that. No. It's perfectly delicious without the spring.
Which is a good segue into the Millionaire.
Okay.
I write cocktail recipes and or articles for a very small print magazine that's distributed mostly around Denver.
What's it called?
It's called Nourish.
Okay.
It's a lovely little magazine, and I've been writing for it since the launch. So I'm in 4 issues, and this will be my 5th coming up out of 6 that they've had. So I was given basically 8 or 9 ounces of Grand Marnier Cuvée de Centenaire, or however you say French words.
That sounds adequate to me. Cuvée is certainly correct.
Right.
You were given this by them? That's sweet.
The editor of the magazine was given a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So I was tasked with recipe testing and given some amount of the liqueur. I looked it up online, and it is definitely meant to be like sipped with ice.
Mm.
Or neat without ice.
Because it's super special.
It's their 100-year anniversary celebration, blah, blah, blah.
I hope their press release literally says blah, blah, blah. Did you taste it? Like, did you do like a side-by-side comparison to see if it was super special compared to regular Grand Marnier?
I didn't compare it to regular Grand Marnier.
Well, you're not doing your job then, Jake.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
All right. So you get this super fancy free bottle of booze and...
Mm-hmm. So I look up, what are standard Grand Marnier cocktails? What's a cocktail that calls for Grand Marnier?
Yep.
And among the list were something I tried called a Red Lion, which is very disappointing because it is not red.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Millionaire, which looked right up my alley because it's rye whiskey based and it has an egg white and it's supposed to have a nice foamy top.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the site that I got the recipe from is weird.
Okay. In what way is it weird?
Well, the recipe was for 2 cocktails, which... Please just don't do math for me. Like, give me 1 cocktail worth of recipe, and I will double it myself. And then, the way it worked out, the proportions were super funky. Either that, or I just made the drink horribly.
Mm-hmm.
which I don't think so, because it was one of the first drinks I made that day.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So you still have some of your senses working. Yeah. All right.
And so the way it worked out is it ended up being 3 cocktail glasses worth of cocktail, and there was not enough egg white to actually provide the foamy top. It was just a thick, viscous drink.
That sounds delicious. Bring it on.
So
I want to see that on a menu.
Yeah.
What does this taste like? It's a thick, viscous drink.
Yeah.
Yum! Thank you.
It's like slightly sweet motor oil.
Not enough egg white. Thick, viscous drink.
Yeah.
Not happy.
No, not happy at all. I might try it again with a different somebody else's recipe.
Yep.
But did not enjoy.
Do you know where of it was it originated?
The Millionaire? I don't. I'm going to see if it's in my newest book, which is The Cocktail Chronicles.
So I have found a site which I won't name because they don't sponsor us, so fuck them, but It says The Millionaire is a group of drinks sharing the same name but with wildly different recipes.
There are numbered millionaires, just like Corpse Revivors. I know this.
It does sound like a good name for a drink.
Yeah.
This one is, I think, the one you were looking at, which is 4 ounces of rye. Yep. Jesus Christ.
Well, it's for 2. But still, do the math.
4 ounces of rye.
Do the math and tell me how many ounces that recipe adds up to.
That's a lot. And then 1.5 ounces of Grand Marnier, 4 dashes of absinthe, 1/2 ounce grenadine, 1/2 ounce lemon juice, which is optional. You don't have to do that.
I did do it.
And 1 egg white, which I would agree, 1 egg white for 2 drinks is not egg white enough.
You need an egg white per drink. But yeah, so I ended up with 3 cocktail glasses, one of which was like a 2.5 ounce, very small cocktail glass.
Mm-hmm.
But I filled 3 glasses with a very viscous and reasonably tasty cocktail.
And you wanted to tell us about this because?
Because that was something new I tried.
And it failed.
Well, yeah.
This is unexpected for me. I thought you were going to highlight this delicious drink, and instead you're like, don't make this at home.
Or, yeah, use somebody else's recipe.
Okay. We're almost out of time.
Well, what is something new that you have tried recently?
You mean cocktail-wise or ingredient-wise or either or?
Either or. Could be a new place you went to. Could be whatever.
The thing that comes to mind is that we did go, and when I say we, that would be my friend Dinah and I. We go for cocktails every Tuesday, and we went to the refurbished, redone, regutted, and re-originalized Café du Nord here in San Francisco, which is a storied bar. Been there probably at least 100 years, right on Market Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's a downstairs bar, and they closed it probably a year ago, and some people took it over. It wasn't divey, but it really did need to have somebody come in and you know, polish the brass and sparkle things up. And I was very happy and very impressed. I think they've done a great job. It's not overly expensive. The one weird thing, which I guess you can expect from any bar that's underground, is if you come in during the afternoon from the bright sunlight of California to the suddenly darkness and you're walking downstairs, just be extra cautious that
use the handrail.
You're entering a bar and one presumes that you're at least somewhat sober at first.
Right.
But literally falling down a stairway as you enter a bar is probably not the way you want to introduce yourself.
Probably not.
I would just urge a note of caution there. I don't remember it being so dark before, but they revamped the interior. The bar is beautiful. It's all, you know, I It's that thing where they came in and they noticed that it had been abused to some extent.
Right.
And all we really want to do is clean it up and polish it and leave it the way it is.
Yep.
And the drinks are amazing. If you are, like me, one of those people who likes challenging the bartender, mm-hmm. and say, you know, give me something, and they suss out the ingredients that you're looking for or what your current tastes are.
Yeah.
It's an excellent venue for that as well. Highly recommend it. They do open early, so you can walk in, I think, around 5.
Nice.
They have a kitchen, so you can get a burger at the bar and just kind of hang out and have a nice afternoon. It was great.
That sounds like your ultimate Tipple Tuesday destination.
It was super satisfying, and I would go back. Thumbs up, 5 stars, whatever those ratings are, we'll say yes.
A++++. Well, that sounds excellent. And since I've been doing book plugs like nobody's business, I will say that your friend Dinah authored an excellent cocktail book called The Art of the Shim.
Indeed. Available via as an ebook or a book. And I recommend getting the book if
yes.
you're a book person, because the photography is superb, just beautiful. And a shim, if you're not aware, is a low alcohol cocktail.
Yeah.
So it tends towards the vermouths and the Amaros.
Which make them very interesting cocktails.
Yeah, you can try a lot over an evening without getting too sauced. The term shim comes from, it's that little piece of wood that you put under a table to even it out. So it keeps you even through the night, keeps you balanced.
Indeed.
All right, thanks for tuning in, and thanks for joining me here, Jake.
We covered some stuff that we planned to. Thanks, Lance.